Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the SBC podcast. With us today is Tim Ward. He's the co-author of the book, Pro Truth, a practical plan for putting truth back into politics. Very, very relevant. He is on the board of directors that oversees the Pro Truth Pledge, founded by his co-author, Dr. Gleb Tsipersky. And some of you have heard Dr. Gleb Tsipersky already on the podcast. Together, they wrote Pro Truth to help people protect themselves from the lies of politicians and to create a movement that they believe is essential for democracy. And he's also the co-owner of Inner Media Communications Training, which is based in the Washington, D.C. area. And he works with global organizations, helping them communicate better. We all need to communicate better. So with that, Tim, welcome. And can you tell us what is pro-truth and what is post-truth and why do you see lies in, you know, in politics? I know it may sound like stating the obvious for some people. Why do you see that as destructive, you know, to democracy?
Sure. Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be on your show, Rashid. So post-truth was the Oxford English Dictionary's word of the year in 2016 after the election of Donald Trump to the U.S. presidency 4 years ago. And it means an environment in which facts and the truth of what has happened seems to matter less to voters than what aligns with their emotional experience of reality. Mm-hmm. And the phrase pro-truth was applied to Trump because he was seen as one who would say things that were blatantly false if he thought that would get his followers inspired, angry, riled up to follow him. Following on that, we had phrases like alternative facts, which basically meant lies that make people feel like that's the reality they want to live in. And indeed, we've been on a four-year ride of what post-truth politics looks like from the highest office in the United States. Well, both Gleb and I, from our own very different backgrounds, him as a scientist, me as a media expert and former journalist, communicator, from very different sides, we both had the same powerful conviction that truth actually matters. And so in teaming up to write the book Pro-Truth, we really wanted to make the case that although it looks as if we're in a post-truth era, we, the people, can push back and create a pro-truth movement. And Gleb has been the spearhead for that movement for the past 4 years. I'm happy to serve on his board and to really make the case wherever I can of the importance of truth in our political life. Rashid, if I can ask your listeners to think about it, in your business, would you survive if you consistently lied to your clients?
No.
And I think there's nobody
catch up
listening.
With you eventually.
Nobody. They would catch up with you eventually. And when they found out that you were lying, you'd lose their business.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in business knows that. They know there's a cost to lying to your customer,
right,
to lying to your clients.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Yet in politics, weirdly, there's this kind of belief that, politicians lie. What can you do about it? Well, I mean, the answer is you fire them when elections come around. But more than that, there needs to be a lessening of any tolerance of politicians lying because that's what politicians do. So we don't believe that that's true, but we believe politicians are all tempted to lie when they feel it might serve them well. And it's up to we, the people, to police them and punish them if they lie to us consistently. And I'm happy to see that that's what the American people did to the post-truth president, Donald Trump. I'm unhappy to see how close this past election was. So there's clearly a lot of work to still do for the pro-truth cause.
Right, right. So perception is reality. So if you can get people into a certain zone, then especially there are a lot of gullible people. But with that being said, Tim, how do you guys see this happening? Who are you talking to? I know you mentioned a movement and this is a big undertaking. So how do you hope to achieve that? And who are you guys talking to? How are you approaching this?
Mm-hmm. Well, the heart of the movement is an organization that Gleb set up, and he's the director of this nonprofit called the Pro-Truth Pledge. It's easy to find at protruthpledge.org. Mm-hmm. And the heart of this is a simple promise that people can make by clicking their promise to sign it on this website to abide by 12 pro-truth behaviors. There are some things that are quite obvious, like not posting stuff that is misinformation on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Requiring a little more, it's fact-checking whatever you do want to post to make sure you are not unintentionally spreading misinformation. And then there's some other behaviors that aren't quite as intuitive, but still very important, like telling your friends and colleagues, if they're posting stuff that is clearly misinformation, correcting them in a way that's appropriate to your relationship, and directing them to the Pro-Truth Pledge as an opportunity for them to be less part of the problem, more part of the solution themselves. And similarly, if others with different political perspectives particularly critique you or point out that you posted something that may not be true, it's honoring the truth when people bring it to you. So if, and this has happened to me a couple of times, just friends of mine who have a very different political perspective have critiqued me, have said, you just posted this, but I thought you signed the Pro-Truth Pledge. I have to check it myself, and then I have to not only take it down, but I promised to write to them and say, thank you for helping me update my sense of what's true, what's factual on this issue. I appreciate you. I respect that you did that for me.
Yeah,
that takes some humility.
Right? Yes.
So, but there's a bunch of these. They're easy to follow and written in very simple language, not quite the Ten Commandments, but the 12 phases of the Pro-Truth Pledge are all there on that website. And by simply starting off by taking that pledge, you become part of the Pro-Truth movement. And then there are several ways that it expands from there, but that really is the baseline. And there's now over, not only over 11,000 people have signed the pledge since Gleb created it, but over 1,000 elected officials have signed it from both parties.
That is awesome.
And from all kinds of nonpartisan places in between. Any one of your listeners, not only individual, but your company and organization can sign the pledge if they want to be part of the Pro-Truth movement. It's a fantastic way for citizens to make truth matter in politics.
Yeah. Awesome. And that is not partisan. This is universal. This is just all people are like concerned with the truth and concerned with democracy and our civilization.
Absolutely.
It seems to be a threat.
Yeah. In fact, it's not only nonpartisan, it's transpartisan, because a nation, to be a democracy, has to have a baseline of common facts. People, and the brilliance of the American system is you have a system designed for people who have very different values, right? The founding fathers had very different values, very different senses of what even was right and wrong. But they created this system that people could come together, take a set of common facts and argue, well, what's the way forward? Find compromises. That's been the beauty of the system. But if you are post-truth and you deny the facts, then you create a situation where one side is simply shouting at another side. And we've seen that in the United States.
Yeah.
Even right at the period when we're doing this, this interview today, where President Trump has said there's been voter fraud in this election. Many other officials, including those in his own party, have all said, no, that's not true. And there's been no cases showing any kind of widespread voter fraud. But that fact is not being spread. So you've got people just yelling at each other instead of respecting the facts.
Yeah. Yeah. We're losing the civility and we're losing that, that dialogue, which are, you know, some of the most important foundations of like for a democracy. But also people, a lot of people, I mean, it's shocking. They don't realize what it is like to be in a non-democracy. And there's a lot that people take for granted and they don't realize how important it is and how fragile and how it's all like all of our responsibility to make sure that we do what we can to protect that right and that privilege. So Tim, I mean, you mentioned the illusion of truth. Can you speak a little bit about that? You mentioned that in the book, I believe.
Yes, we have an entire chapter on this powerful cognitive bias known as the illusion of truth. It's something that researchers have done multiple psychological tests to show is true. But I imagine for many of your listeners, this will also seem intuitively true. And that is simply when we hear something over and over again, it starts to sound true, even if it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
So just again, to take our current election cycle, Trump in 2016 said again and again, crooked Hillary, crooked Hillary, crooked Hillary. And many people who really didn't know Hillary Clinton or her record at all, that I remember having conversations with at the time, said to me, you know, there's just something about Hillary I don't trust. And I would say, what? Where? And they would just say, well, you know, I just don't trust her. They didn't know where it came from, but it came from this constant bombardment of Crooked Hillary. In fact, by that point, she'd been investigated so many times by Congress that if there were anything crooked, it would have been revealed by then. And still to date, she's not ever been convicted or even indicted for anything. Sure, she's been investigated by a negative Congress, but no crimes, right? But we believe it because we've heard it again and again. Now, there's a simple explanation as to how that happens. Whenever we hear a new idea, it's complicated to process, right? The first time somebody mentioned quantum physics to anybody listening, that was probably what? And if somebody tried to explain, it was really, really hard. But if you hear something explained several times, it starts to become easy to understand. What's interesting about our minds is the easier something becomes to understand, the more likely we are to think it's true, if not fully true, to at least say, oh yeah, that. Election fraud, man, several years ago, if you said election fraud, most people would say, really? Ah, that's just impossible. No, it doesn't happen in the US. But now a lot of people think, I don't really know that it didn't happen. So even if they're not 100% convinced, the needle has been moved. So by simply repeating a lie again and again, it becomes almost as powerful as truth. And the media, I believe, have done a horrible job on this because they have repeated lies many, many times, quoting the president, quoting members of Congress or those who work for his campaigns. Simply quoting a lie gives it strength, even if you say, by the way, that's a lie.
Yeah. And what are some tricks and some ways that people have been doing that and some examples? I know people like one of the tricks people were doing before is they will issue a release and then they will quote that release, as proof. So, what are some manipulations in some ways that the media has been implicit, in that and then, in general, originators of those lies?
Yeah. So certainly there's a portion of the media that reports lies as if they're truth. That happens both on the extreme left and on the extreme right. We've seen more of it on the extreme right because that's where the center of political power has been. But you get left societies, places like Turkey right now, former communist nations, which were far to the left, it certainly happens there. Lies have no political allegiance.
right. I don't like that.
Yeah. But what you see happening with the media that's trying to be accountable is Trump will tweet something and they will pounce on the tweet. They'll repeat what is in the tweet. Well, again, voter fraud is what we're talking about so much right now. So rampant voter fraud. Whenever that tweet gets repeated, the idea of rampant voter fraud gets repeated again and again and again. The media have tried in some ways to counter that. They started by saying, said Trump without evidence. That still leaves it there in the listener's mind. More recently, they've started to say, the president asserted the following, which has no basis in fact. Then they say the lie. But they're still repeating it. They're still pounding it into people's brain, drip, 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 drip. Now, it's the hard thing for the media is these highly inflammatory emotional statements are the catnip of the news media. They are drawn to divisive, strong, fear-inducing, hatred-inducing phrases. They can't seem to help themselves. Yeah. And in that way, they have been complicit with the president in creating a post-truth environment. And Trump has, led the media by the nose for 4 years. Even those like CNN who have been virulently against many of his worst lies, they have played right into his hands.
Their business models are just built, for that. I mean, it's all whatever, stokes, controversy, fear, and all of these things. There's obviously a lot of psychology in it. Speaking of that, you mentioned cognitive biases, and I'm always fascinated in what makes people like so open to falling into those traps and being receptive to those lies and misrepresentations.
Right. This is something I've been fascinated with for a decade. Our brains have been sculpted by our evolution on the African savanna. We are really good at surviving those kinds of challenges to safety. A lion, we can quickly get into the mode of fight or flight. Right? We feel fear strongly and we react to it fiercely. We're not so good with long-term stressful situations, like constantly going over budget and being told you must be under budget next quarter. Our brains haven't really well adapted to that. So it's a struggle. We end up having long-term stress side effects, as anybody who's in HR knows. These sorts of things could be really debilitating in the long run. So cognitive biases are the ways that our brains were well-tooled for surviving in a different, more primitive world, but that leads us to make misjudgments and other errors in real life. And there's a very simple example that I think everybody can get, and that is that of the blind spot. The blind spot in your car, right? Everybody in driver's ed, they learned you've got your rear view mirror, your side view mirror, but there's a place you can't see between those two mirrors. And if there's a car a little bit behind you in the next lane and you change lanes, you'll hit it without seeing it. That's a blind spot. A blind spot is something that's there, but we can't perceive it accurately because of our cognitive lenses. What do we learn to do in driver's ed? Shoulder check. All the time, shoulder check before changing lanes. It's drilled into us. There are similar ways that we can become aware of the cognitive bias blind spots we have, and we can train ourselves to see them coming. Within business, this is hugely important. In fact, Gleb recently wrote another book, which many in your audience, maybe you've even interviewed him on this, called Never Go With Your Gut, which is all about those blind spots and how they affect us in the business world. But man, in the political world, those biases are not only there, but they're abused. They're abused in the same way that a fisherman abuses a fish when he designs a fishing lure. A lure looks like a minnow, but it's a trap. Politicians create post-truth lies designed to look like the truth, so we will swallow them and get hooked.
Wow, what an analogy, Tim. I love it. So, Tim, is there something you want to share with the audience that hasn't come up in the conversation before we wrap up?
Yes. I'm aware at this time in our nation, there's this huge sense of relief. There's this desire for things to go back to normal. This is actually another cognitive bias. It's called the normalcy bias. It's our natural belief that things will return to some baseline. But we've gone through a crisis as a nation. And the response to a crisis may feel like, I just want to go back to the way things were. I just want to go back to the way things were before the pandemic. But the best response is to actually seek to become more resilient, to make sure this doesn't happen again. And so a citizen's push for putting new measures in place to make sure that we won't be lied to again like this, that our political system won't be manipulated and subverted. And, you know, right now we're seeing the president called people to come to the Capitol, and we saw the Capitol invaded and desecrated in Washington, D.C., just on the outskirts of where I live. This moment could be one that inspires us to want to seek to make a stronger and better system so that these sorts of things won't happen. Just as the pandemic should be inspiring us to make sure that we have better health systems and that we're better globally coordinated so that a pandemic in China doesn't end up sickening and killing people in nursing homes in the United States. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
If we want things to go back to the way they were, we miss the huge opportunity that a crisis presents us. And so that would be my message. Beyond the pro-truth movement, get into the movement. You can be part of a change to make things different in the future. Don't go back. Don't bounce back. Bounce forward.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Great message. And as Churchill said, never let a crisis go to waste. So
yeah.
I think definitely we should learn from this, and we should move forward. And Tim, with that, it has been a pleasure. I would just ask you to share how people can stay in touch with you, and whatever you share, we'll put in the notes, and how they can get a hold of you.
Absolutely. So the website for the Pro-Truth Pledge, I can be reached through that, is www.protruthpledge.org. And people who want to contact me more directly can go to my business website, which is intermediacomms.com, intermediacomms.com.
Awesome. And we'll share those in writing so people can just do that. So with that, this concludes this week's episode of the podcast. Please be on the lookout for future ones. And you can listen to this and also past ones on your favorite channel for listening to podcasts. With that, it's been a pleasure, Tim. Thank you very much. And thank you, listeners.
My pleasure, too.